This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to this Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Pete Higgins. You can find me at Conquest3 on Twitter. And I'm here with my good colleague, Henry Viola Hare, on Twitter at HDViola. And this is Twin Peaks Investing Podcast number 134. It's the 21st of August. We're heading towards the bank holiday, long bank holiday weekend. So I'm hoping you guys have, and ladies are preparing yourself for a bit of a chill out and a relax and a gathering with family and friends and loved ones to just unwind, relax, and hopefully have some sunshine. We need a little bit of sun. It's a bit dull here in Leicestershire the last 2 days. Even that was rain, but that's a summertime when the cricket season starts and the football season starts again. Henry, how are you doing, sir?
I'm very well, thank you, Peter. Very well indeed. Unlike Leicester, we've had plenty of sun down here in London, which I've been enjoying. Got plans to go to Poole for the weekend, go and see the sea, fight the seagulls, eat some fish and chips, all that good stuff.
You can't go anywhere without ordering fish and chips, so it doesn't really matter where you go, really, does it? Brilliant. No, mate, I hope you have a fantastic week and bank holiday weekend, mate, as well. Right, let's go straight into the markets, Henry. I want to talk about the pod we had last. I want to say a big, big thank you to everybody that gave us the feedback regarding it. To Lewis, thank you ever so much, sir. To Matthew Gregory, thank you for your fantastic feedback. For Gerard, thank you, Jared, for your feedback as well. It was a difficult conversation we needed to have it, discussing the unfortunate incidents that were triggered, that were incited, etc., etc. And in the midst of all of that, as everyone has said, the three young girls were missed, overlooked even, and individuals brought shame to those families. And the funerals have happened for two of them. Another one's due shortly. The King went to Southport as well. I think that was yesterday, which is really, really good that he went there to speak with the families and the people that tried to do some good during those few days before before his visit, should I say. So yeah, so thank you all for your feedback. Was there anything you want to add to that, Henry? Because we had quite a few people contact you and contact me as well regarding that particular pod and what we were talking about.
We did. I'm glad you brought it up, actually, Peter, because honestly, I've had some really nice messages the last 2 weeks. I've had people reach out on Twitter in my DMs. I've had a couple of text messages from people. I had somebody drop a message through my blog. We've had messages on YouTube. I think it's really shown the best in our community here that follow the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. I've had some very, very thoughtful messages sent, and it's really been nice to hear from everybody. So thank you to everybody that's written in, because it's genuinely meant a lot. So thank you.
Absolutely agree. That's the beauty of having some good individuals that follow this podcast and consistently follow this pod. And before I go into anything more, I've sent Henry a very quick message this afternoon, because every now and then I have these little moments when I go, well, that might be a good idea. He's not had a chance to respond to me yet regarding that, because we've just come back on the pod. But one of the things I'm thinking of doing before the year is out is that the individuals that have been very, very supportive to us and have retweeted, reshared, commented about the pod, positive or negative, directly to us and directly to Henry, we're going to look to do a special live pod like we did for episode 100 at some point later this year. And what we're going to do is trying to aggregate some of the individuals over the past 6 months to the point where we get to the pod, as to who's been more, what's the word, vocal, more supportive. I think supportive is probably the right word, yeah, to the pod, And we're going to invite those onto a live podcast, which we were going to record as a special podcast, a bit like we did last time. I think we had 22 individuals on the pod last time. It was a logistic nightmare for me, but it was good fun in the end, despite the fact it lasted 4 hours. But it was nice to have a few beers with individuals live on screen. So we're going to try and do that. So if you want to become one of the ambassadors for the Twin Peaks Investing podcast, all you got to do is make a comment on Twitter, yeah, X, should we say, on YouTube, yeah, or email Henry, or send me a DM or whatever. Just retweet the pod. Follow the pod and tell us what you'd like about it. What little thing you found of interest. Any other criteria you want to add, Henry?
Well, I think don't be a stranger. I mean, one of the nicest things that I've seen since I've joined the pod as a co-host is the people that come back time and time again, and they're not there every episode. It's not as though they're always saying something, but when they do, they've watched something and they've commented on something specific, and you can tell that they're really watching, they're really listening, and it's lovely. I mean, we had a message from Terry Vaughan on YouTube, and I've not heard from Terry for quite a few weeks, to be honest with you, but it was so nice to hear from him. I'm not so sure about the allusions to Morecambe and Wise, by the way, but if we get a bit of dancing in, and we'll see how we get on, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm definitely not Wise, mate, so I must be Morecambe, so there you go. Oh, dear. Right, okie dokie. Going to get into the pod. We're going to start with the FTSE. We had the Japanese carry trade absolutely spook a few people, as we mentioned on the last pod. Some people were selling up 50%, 70%, 80% of their portfolio, going to cash because the end was nigh. And that was 2 weeks ago. So we're looking at what was then the 4th, 5th, 6th of August. And everyone got some people got spooked earlier on, the end of July, beginning of August. And what we've seen since then, markets went, yeah, that was just a few days of worry, mate. Don't worry about it. We're absolutely fine. Yeah. Back to normal. Let's go again. So a couple of the US indices have hit highs again, or near as damn it. The tech heavy NASDAQ has not as yet, I don't think. Because the Magnificent Sevens hasn't really rallied, but which I think is not a bad thing, really, that they've rallied a little bit, but not as much as they have done in the past, back to their all highs, because they're getting a broader width, or broader breadth, should I say, of US stocks lifting the general market. It's not just this small pool of tech stocks carrying everybody else up. They're broadening the breadth, so therefore you're getting more and more companies that are actually engaging with buyers.
You know, well, they describe it as
so let me buy that.
They describe it as a healthier market, don't they? That's something I've heard the talking heads say, on CNBC. You've got investors really looking at the whole market and seeing value across the market, as opposed to just buying these seven mega cap tech shares and hoping that you can, you know, sell them to someone else for more tomorrow.
Absolutely spot on, Henry. So in saying all of that, what was interesting was we had that blip. The market had a little wobble. It, as I said to Henry on the last pod, we went sub 8,000 on the FTSE 100. Yeah, caused me to be a little bit like, uh-oh, really? Let's see what happens now. And that was my concern months ago, as you know, whether we get to 9 or go sub 8, we hit the sub 8. And then we decided to go up again. Being carried by certain companies in the FTSE 100. And we hit a 100-day high on the 15th, yeah, which is last week. Where are we? Tuesday. Is that right, Henry?
Sounds about right.
No, last week Thursday. We hit an intraday high of 8,364. Then we went better. We hit an intraday high of 8,374 on the 20th. Yeah, which is yesterday. Yesterday, just 2 weeks on. And what does that mean? It meant yesterday's intraday high was just a single 100 points away from our all-time intraday high which we had back in May. Seems like a distance away when we're all going whoop, whoop, whoop. FTSE 100 is at all-time high. So that intraday high was 8,474. Yeah, 100 points below we hit that intraday just one day ago. And we closed that day at 8,045. Today, we're at 8,283, just sub 200 points away from that high. But we're there and thereabouts. We keep bobbing up and bobbing down. We need a little bit of a catalyst to push on and have a closure of 8,400 plus and hold that for a few days. And maybe if we get any sort of big news, catalyst news, we can push through and actually hit another all-time high for the FTSE before we have any problems. Low volume, everyone's on holiday. Not everyone, obviously not everybody. Lots of people on holiday until the second week of September. The volume will come back. And if we get positive volume, markets go higher. The US markets hits new highs again. FTSE might get carried up as well. So we'll see. Right, FTSE All Share today down 0.24% at 4,536. FTSE AIM All Share down 0.36% at 776. It's still below that magic 8,000. So we need to keep an eye on those sort of markets. Need a bit of catalyst. We'll wait and see what happens. And that's where we are with the markets, Henry. They can't make their minds up. I get the feeling they want to go higher because every single bit of negative news, it goes and then goes again. It's shaking out the weak hands, you know.
Well, let me ask you a question here. Don't shoot me, but could you explain to me, so the FTSE 100's at, what did we just say, 5,700?
No.
8,283. Right. Can you explain to both me and the rest of our audience, what does 1 point on that index represent?
A fraction of all the 100 individual indexed companies that make up the 100.
But what index. Fraction? So is it one share of each of them?
No.
Is it
every single company is weighted differently, right?
Yeah.
So you could have the 99 indexed companies, right, fall by an absolute fraction of a point, right?
Yeah.
And the largest company, AstraZeneca, currently 200 billion, right, moves up 3% on that day, right? And essentially, depending on the smallest minutiae movement, let's just say they're all flat, did nothing. The actual FTSE could end up, yeah, or
because
still
because AstraZeneca
despite
is
those
relatively larger than all the others.
It depends on the composite. It's the same as the Magnificent Seven carrying the Nasdaq.
Gotcha.
Yeah, you've got BP, you've got Shell, you've got AstraZeneca, HSBC. GSK a bit further down, Unilever, Reckitt Benckiser. If all of those have a good day and they're up, yeah, singularly 1%, the market itself will be up more than 1% because they're weighted so heavily in the FTSE 100. You go all the way down to the 99th index company, that could move 10% and maybe not even move the needle for the whole of the FTSE 100.
Gotcha.
Yeah?
Gotcha.
So it's all about weighting. It's when we say about things being equally weighted. The FTSE is not equally weighted. The Nasdaq's not equally weighted.
Although you can buy equally weighted indexes, can't you? Because I've heard of them.
You certainly can.
So and where ETFs, certainly each can. Of the 100 would be worth, say, 1% of
absolutely,
a point, I presume.
Absolutely. Absolutely
right.
That.
Okay.
Yeah. What you have to then do is rebalance them each time.
So that's what happens when something drops out of or enters the FTSE. That's what we're saying. It's either become worth enough that it's now the 100th most valuable, or something else has knocked it out of position, so it's now the 101st and no
longer
weakened, appears.
It's had a profit warning, it's had a crash. We've seen lots of companies yo-yo between the FTSE 250 and 100. There's like, they go out, all of the fund managers that only own institutions that only own FTSE 100 companies go, we've got to sell it. You can see it just declining when they've announced that it's going out, declining. And then the FTSE 250 companies, funds that have to have that in that index or that whatever fund that they've got, are buying it. So sometimes you get a little bit of a pot on a demotion after it's demoted, a little pot because they've got to buy it. And then to come out with some good news, the market cap accelerates a little bit. And either it's one quarter, two quarters, maybe a year later, they're back again in the FTSE 100.
Gotcha. It just occurred to me because, you know, we talk about these index levels at the beginning of every episode, and yet we never really talk about how they function and what's going on in the constituent parts. I mean, there was a headline I spotted, I think it was probably Tuesday, Wednesday last week, about Google. So one of the, you know, the Magnificent Seven over in the US, biggest tech companies in the world, Google. And the US court, or a US court, has just ruled that they violated something called antitrust law. Now, antitrust law is effectively a set of regulations that's designed to stop monopolies from happening. So it's designed to create competition in the market and prevent any one company or group of companies from becoming too powerful. Now, Google has been around such a long time and is so big that when you want to find something online, where do you go? You go to Google. You search for it on Google, whether it's an image, it's a product, it's a website, you go to Google. How's that ended up being the case? There used to be, years ago when I was little, I mean, there was Ask Jeeves, there was Yahoo Search, there was MSN.com.
I grew up with Yahoo, mate. Yes,
there you go, you
I'm
see.
That old. Yeah.
So these, I mean, I presume they're still around somewhere in the backlands of the internet. You could probably go find them, but no
I'm
one
not
ever
sure
does.
Everybody
Ask Jeeves,
uses Google. Yahoo's still there. Yeah, Yahoo's still there, thereabouts.
Now, I didn't
really monopolized everything. It's cannibalized everything, you know, to the point where we've still got Bing. No one talks about Bing.
Well, you know, there's a good reason for that. It's rubbish.
But it's, you know, it's got, I don't know what the market share is, but search-wise, bloody hell, it's significant.
It's up there. But I didn't realize until this case came out, apparently Google has been spending tens of billions of dollars a year to become the default search engine with different hardware and software providers. So they've been paying, you know, what's the phone on your desk? A Samsung, right? They've been paying Samsung, let's say $30 billion a year for the last God knows how many years, so that Google is installed as the default search engine on a Samsung mobile. So as soon as you go on and you try to search for something, there it is. It just pops up. You don't even think about it. Now, because of this, Google has basically got a monopoly on how you find information on the internet. Because why would you ever bother going and looking for an alternative to Google? You just use Google. It works. You don't even think about it.
Yeah.
But what if Google doesn't show you what you wanted to see? So just before we came on air, you and I were talking about the example of hand soap, right? I use Imperial Leather soap, right? I buy it, I use it, I have a wash with it.
Why? Why?
What do you mean, why? Because it's great.
Imperial Leather?
Imperial
That's a proper old man's gear, that is. You better ask Steve. I bet you got that from Steve, mate.
I didn't. I got it from my dad.
Your dad. There you go. Your dad was using it. Okay, fair enough.
So, Imperial Leather hand soap, right? So I search for soap, up it pops because I always buy it and I go and buy some more. But what if my next door neighbour at this very moment was making soap that was half the price, smelled twice as good, would make Verity think I'd become George Clooney overnight, right? Put money in my bank account. It's magic soap, right? And it's available for half the price of Imperial Leather. But Google doesn't show me it. How does that brand ever get any traction in the market? It can't, because everybody's sent to Imperial Leather, they buy Imperial Leather, it kills the market. Therefore, this US court has basically ruled Google is a monopoly, it's in breach of antitrust law, and this has potentially opened the gateway for Google to be split up. One of the biggest firms in the world could be fractured by an American court and forced to sell off bits and bobs all over the place. What's that going to do to the US markets?
Market dominance, mate, and these partnerships that they've got. If it get, these cases happen on a regular basis, and what tends to happen is that small fines are made, yeah, made and paid, and they continue until the next time somebody goes, you've got, I don't know what size it is at the minute, 2 trillion, whatever it is. It's a significant sized company, mate. And if they go and have a situation where they have just a cough, it could send shockwaves through the market. Yeah, because they don't want to break up. They want that monopoly. They've been allowed to have the monopoly. They've been allowed to make stupid amounts of money over the past umpteen years. They're not going to give that up without a fight. And they'll drag this out properly for as long as they possibly can until there's no room for the manoeuvre and they've got to do something. But this isn't going to happen overnight. It really isn't.
Nope.
You know what I mean? And if they are going to see any money being lost somewhere, they'll go into a different space and buy something else and start to grow that to offset the losses that they may have there in search, just a little bit. You know, I was having a conversation with somebody just last night about the sheer size of our companies. You know, we've got our blue chip companies, and some of them are FTSE 100 listed companies, and they're 4, 5, 10 billion pounds market cap. Now, for Google, they could probably just pick that up and plop it in their car park. Yep. You know, not necessarily the buildings and the works, but that's the schematics about the scale of size it is in comparison to a $2 trillion company.
Well, $2 trillion, how many billions are in a trillion? Is it 1,000?
1,000, Henry.
1,000 billion in a trillion, and they're worth $2 trillion, you know. So they could go and buy, I mean, what's AstraZeneca worth? 200 billion?
200 billion. And it's our biggest company, and you could fit it into Google probably 20 times.
Well, there you go. It's absolutely staggering when you think about it.
Someone do the maths. How many times can AstraZeneca fit into the market cap of Google? Yeah. Right. Answers. Let's talk about some stocks, Henry. Antitrust or no antitrust? All we know is that right now, Google is a behemoth. It has a monopoly. Somebody wants to shake it up. I wonder if it's related to Bing. You know, and I'm not talking Cosby. Or Crosby, even.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe, and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Right. Okie dokie. Do you want to go first, Henry? We're going to talk about a few stocks, ladies and gents, related to pharma, related to healthcare, and...
You missed the hook.
Do we own any of the ones that we're going to talk about? I don't think we do. I know I don't. And there's some interesting stocks here that I think people should have a look at. And the reason why I suggested this particular conversation was because of AstraZeneca becoming a 200 billion market cap. I think there's at least one of these that I've got that could 10 bag. Not necessarily go to 2 billion. Oh, sorry, 200 billion, but could 10 bag. So I'm going to share one of those with you. Do you want to go first, Henry?
Saucy. 10 bag. I don't know about that,
ladies. 10 bags. If you hold it long enough. Listen, traders don't get 10 bags. They get 10%, 15%, 25% if they're lucky over the course of a week, a month, a year. But you compound, the compound, and compound, and buy into the dips. You can 10 bag the stock.
Happy days. I am just going to say you totally missed the hook there. Imperial Leather.
Sorry.
Healthcare brand, soap, dude. There was a whole lead in.
I missed it.
You just can't get the staff these days, folks.
I know.
Anyway,
yeah,
right, on to the first
one over my head, but I'm not going to. Right. Are you going first or don't start?
I'm going to go first. So, my company is a £625 million market cap, diverse healthcare service organization. With operations in Ireland, the UK, and Benelux, which is a little country near Belgium. If you can't guess who it is, it's a company called Uniphar. That's Unipar. The ticker is UPR. Now, this company partners with pharmaceutical and medical technology manufacturers to provide access to medicines. They've got relationships with over 200 of the world's best-known pharmaco-medical manufacturers across multiple geographies. The business is split into two parts. They've got this medical technology piece, who effectively are a medical device distributor and partner of choice for manufacturers seeking to bring medical technology products to market. So let's say, Peter, you are a great scientist, maybe you are, you're working in your garage, you've come up with a newfangled contraption that enables, I don't know, microsurgery to be done. You've cobbled it together out of bits of string and duct tape and some biros. And now you need a way to manufacture it at scale, manufacture it at scale and get it out to the market. That's what the medical technology arm of Uniphar does. They provide a platform for sales, marketing, compliance and distribution. So all you have to do is turn up, demonstrate your biro widget that cures cancer, and they do the rest. They take it out to market. They find the sales channels for you. They get it through compliance in different countries. And you get some nice checks at the end of the day when your device is sold to hospitals and pharmacies and clinics and the like. The other part of the business is their pharmaceuticals arm, which works with pharmaceutical and biotech companies to bring medicines to markets and provide healthcare professionals with access to medicines that they can't source through traditional channels. Now, this is a really interesting bit of the business. You or I, let's say we buy, paracetamol. It's out of patent. There are 1,000 different brands of it. You can buy it in every corner shop, on every high street, anywhere in the world, pretty much. You don't need to worry about it. But there are other medicines which either maybe the NHS decides are too expensive. They offer them for a couple of years and then they take them off the market. And the doctor wants to give you them, but they can't access them. Uniphar Pharma specializes in helping doctors to provide patients with those sorts of medicines, something that maybe it's provided in another country and you can't get it, or maybe it's been unbranded or off-licensed, or something's changed, but there's a barrier in the way to the patient getting it. They're a provider of effectively what's called pre-wholesale and wholesale distribution services, and they've also got regional depots across Ireland. So they've got quite a thriving pharmacy business across Ireland, which is, it sounds quite niche, but it's one of their major markets. So where we've got Boots over in the UK, they've got sort of three or four Irish brands that sell direct to retail. Very healthy return on capital, 15%, pays a little dividend of 0.7% a year, and it's available for about £2.30 a share, which is nowhere near its all-time highs. So I thought that was a really interesting business. I thought it was the sort of thing that someone like AstraZeneca could snap up without even pausing. And a really interesting business, to be honest.
Okie dokie, okie dokie. An interesting company, that one, Henry. It's not one that I really ever see being discussed. I'm not sure why, because it's, you know, it's listed here. When I looked at it, my only concern with it was the fact that for the past 3 years, it's not done much. Yeah. So the shares are down over the course of 3 years. And the dividend, I want to be paid. If I'm going to buy something, I'm going to be patient with it. I want a dividend that's going to keep me, you know, I'm going to get a little divvy, be able to reinvest it, and keep me happy. But the shares are down 31%. The divvy yield is sub 1%. So even if I compounded that for the past 3 years, I'm down 27%. And I'm thinking, what, I'm not getting compensated for my losses here. So what's the catalyst next for Uniphar? What's going to cause them to go, right, that's it now, guys. We've, you know, ladies and gents, we've remedied everything. We're going to see revenues and profitability increasing. Shares going to go back on a climb now. Or am I waiting for someone to take it over? What have you seen that you think that could be the catalyst, or this has happened recently that the market's not seeing?
To me, this is a, I don't know the healthcare sector terrifically well, but to me, this looks like a really interesting acquisition time it based on what they actually do. So the existing network they've got in medical technology and the pharmaceuticals arm, they're both quite niche businesses, but they're very well established. They've got scale, you know, 625 million market cap. They've got reasonable revenue as well, good profits. This is the sort of business that I could see a competitor coming along and just buying as a bolt-on acquisition. You strip out the extra costs, you strip out the marketing and the accounting and the overheads that you don't want, and you've actually got quite a successful, healthy business here. You know, 15% return on capital is nothing to be sneezed at. I agree with you with the return on capital, sorry, with the yield of less than 1%. You know, if you bought this 3 years ago, to be honest, you wouldn't be thrilled with it. But the cheaper it gets, the more I think maybe someone could come along and buy this. And it's also a name that no one's talking about.
No one's talking about it.
And don't those often make really interesting acquisition targets?
They do. They often do, mate. And the only time people see value in the stock or think it's undervalued is when it receives a takeover, you know, 30% premium. Oh, but it should be more worth. It's worth more than that. Well, did you buy it, you know, with 35% cheaper? No. So why do you think it's worth another 20% more than that then? It is what it is, mate. It is what it is. Good call, mate. Good shout. I will have a look at that. Have I looked at Unifar before? No. I will have
Excellent.
To go and look, Henry. Yeah. And I'll be checking and looking for a catalyst for a re-rating, I think. That would be my thing for it. It's always nice when it's off the radar and no one's talking about it. Because I got a call. What was it? When were we in London? We were in London Thursday. I think it was last Friday I got back. My mate, he described himself as a dirty trader. Right? That's his words, not mine. And he gives me a call. He says, "Oh, God, this stock, Pete, they're all talking about it. It's going to go this. This is going to happen." I get these calls from him regularly, mate. And he knows what I'm going to say. And I say to him, is it a story stock? What do you mean? I goes, and I ask him a couple of questions, and he always comes back and goes, no, no, no. I'll just say to him, crack on then. Right. Oh, dear.
Anyway, hate calls like that.
Yeah.
What do
so
you think
he's
about?
A trader. He's in and out for 5, 10, 15, 30% if he's lucky. And he rang me on Monday. No, the weekend. Rang me the weekend going, oh, you missed out on this, you missed out on that. And I'm like, okay, well done, mate. Well done, you smashed it. Monday morning. Oh, I've left a bit on the table. Let's see what happens with this. Right, okay. And then he rings me back up, got smashed in the face, right? Because most of his profit has been eaten up. You know which stock I'm talking about? You remember the story about Novacyt many years ago when it was going to go to the moon, going to be about...
I know the name, but I don't know the company particularly well.
NCYT, mate.
Yeah.
Novacyt. Anyway, did you heard about the stuff talking about the monkeypox stuff kicking off?
Vaguely, yes. Yeah.
Anyway, so it's that was going to be one of the companies that's basically going to be involved in it and maybe able to help out regarding that. Companies have been very quiet on it from what I've seen, not really said a lot, but the storytellers were on social, we're on Facebook, we're on X, we're on other platforms, ramping the out of it. And the shares went from 150 to I think 130 or something daft like that. And everyone's going, it's going to go to £2. Bosh. Went down to, I think, 80p or 70, 80 or 90p yesterday.
Ouch.
Not sure what it's done today. But that's, traders love volatility, mate.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But, you know, but that's Friday, barely Monday, and Tuesday it's like...
But this is the thing. I mean, I got caught with something similar. I've got a big holding in Team Internet Group, used to be Central Nick. Came out with an update. It was kind of confusing and underwhelming, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, I didn't think it was a bad update. The market clearly disagreed with me because the shares went from, there were 210, I think, at the recent high, down to 140-something. They absolutely plummeted. Now, as an investor, I asked myself a couple of questions. Is the business healthier today than it was yesterday? And do I think it's going to be healthier tomorrow than it is today? The answer to both of those questions is yes. Therefore, do I want to sell it? No.
No.
So to me, I got the reaction wrong on the day. I probably could have saved myself a few quid, but I'm not going to panic and run out of this and say it's a terrible business. So whereas to traders, yeah, that's a calamity and a catastrophe and you've blown up half your portfolio because you were 15% in it once it skyrocketed and now it's all gone.
Yeah. Absolutely. And this is the thing about knowledge of the company, and you don't need to spend 40 hours researching it. You mentioned the name to me and I went, no.
Yeah.
and knew enough about the stock historically to go, that's all the research I need to know. No.
Yeah.
This will be a 2-day, 3-week, 4 months sort of trading opportunity for somebody. And it turned out to be a 2-day trading opportunity for somebody. You know, brutal. Some people made 100%, Henry. So I'm the fool, you know? But I was like, mate, just crack on, enjoy yourself. Yeah. Don't, you know, do what you need to do. And he moves on. I mean, this is part of the conversation I have with some of my friends that are traders per se. They need to come up with new ideas, 20 ideas or 15 ideas, 5 ideas every single day. Yeah. As an investor, I don't.
No, exactly.
I can have my portfolio and some of them are going to do good, some are going to do bad, some are going to have profit warnings. I can decide to go, that's a weed. Let me just pull that one out. And I can reinvest that money in another one of the stocks that I've already got that's doing well or come up with some good news. I can add to that and average up if I want to. Or I can have this one here that's not gone anywhere yet, that's due some good news. I can go reinvesting that money in that one there that's done nothing.
Well, that's the thing.
You've got 3 or 4 stocks.
I think I've probably opened 4 new positions.
Other day.
I think I'm about 4 new positions this year with a fifth I'm looking at the minute. I'm probably going to pull the trigger on. And that's in 8 months. And yet, if I said that to your average trader, they're probably doing that a week.
More than that, mate. I know people that are doing 10 trades a day, mate. And some people that are doing 20 trades a day. And going back to your cost situation before, that must be racking up, mate.
Oh, for
I don't
sure.
Care if it's £5 to buy and £5 to sell, or £3 to buy and £3 to sell, times that by 20 over the course of 12 months, every single day, that's a lot of dough.
Yeah. I mean, especially forget a Grey Street, could be completely white upstairs. Just
you get
the 40%
hit rate as well. You get taken out. But say, talking about research, Henry, I did something I thought was a bit naughty today, right? I'm not going to name the stock, but today, having done research and other stuff, I saw, you know, when you see something, you just put your synapses just fire.
Yeah.
I saw that dot, connected it with that dot, connected it with that dot. And I went, I know, just to stop that fits. And I'd literally done the research before, saw the report, did a little check as to who the fund managers were that were in that stock. And I went, bosh, and just bought it. Yeah. And we'll see over the next 3 months what happens with it. Yeah, we'll see what happens the next 3 months about it. But that's probably the least much of research I've done recently.
My bad habits are rubbing off on you.
No, it's not a bad habit, because this is the thing about when you do a wide breadth of research, there are stuff that you pick up and you store, pick up and store, and you just see the headline or you see the news article and the stock name just comes out.
Yeah,
that's related to that. Well, that could be related to that one. And you just go, whoosh. Yeah, sub 1 hour, bought.
Yeah,
and I was like, look to the chart, knew exactly what it did. Bosh,
wonderful.
One clue: AI and property together. Boom.
Oh, I think I know where you've gone there.
No, you don't. We'll have a chat after this is recorded.
Yeah.
I tell you, not you will not know which stock I bought. Right, I'm going to go here now because we've had lots of other people on Twitter over the past year and more recently being quite heinous, miscreants, naughty, not very kind, not very generous, right? And this company deals with some of these people, but in animal form. And it deals with the, well, I'll use a proper term now, animal genetics, right? It helps with the breeding of animals, Henry. Yeah. And we need certain products to breed animals, don't we? And there's lots of people on social media.
Keep a straight face.
I'll
now.
Leave it there. It's getting a bit rude. I'm going to get X-rated. But those people that know me know what I'm saying about certain people on social and elsewhere, even in politics. Anyway, the company I'm talking about is Genus. Yeah? And he's, stop laughing, mate, right? Animal genetics company, FTSE 250 company. And I've been keeping an eye on this one. I do not own it, right? Those of you that know the company already, I'm not going to go through all the spiel about it. You know what it does. It does what it does, says on the tin. It helps breeds animals. And one of its arms is PIC. And that's in the Chinese market. And it's been impacted by that for a little while. It's had a challenging couple of years. This stock was, I think, three times the size a couple of years back. I think it was at £60 per share, if my calculations are right. The 52-week high on the stock at the moment is £23.78. The 52-week low is £14.77. And the current price is £17.56. And it's a profit warning and then another profit warning. And it came up with a profit warning in February, and it hit a five-year low of 14.77, which is what I just said to you there about the price. It's now popped up a little bit to 17.84. My thinking with this one is that depending on what happens in China over the next 6 months or a year, the market could be kinder to Genus. It's already warned that it's going to be struggling to make the profitability that it should do to June 2025. However, any good news could underpin this stock and take it higher and into the 20s. However, if it comes out and says, here's another third, you know, February, you know, trading update in July, and then it gives you the next set of results and gives you another warning, this goes possibly even lower than 14.77 next time round, right? But at some point or other, when it gets some good news, we're looking at a FTSE 250 company here, market cap of 1.16 billion. If it doesn't sort itself out at some point, this gets taken over. It's a unique company for what it does. So I think it's one of them to just keep a little eye on them. I don't own the shares. I'm looking for a catalyst myself regarding it. And if I see a catalyst and it's still sub 20 quid, it might be something I'll get very, very interested in. But I see these being taken out if they don't sort themselves out, because there's very few companies that do what they do. And globally, people are still going to want beef and pork and so on and so forth, those meats. And they want the best breed for the best quality of cut to put on certain tables in the world. Come on, Henry, you're a genius. Tell us what you think.
I don't know about a genius. Quick question for you. What's their revenue?
I haven't got that in front of me at the moment, Henry. The last bit
would I be right in saying that we're more...
The July trading update was saying that expected adjusted profit before tax was going to be 58 million to 61, which was lower again than what they're expecting.
58 million of profit. So let's say that's actually more than I was expecting. So let's say 10% profit margin. So maybe revenue of what, 500 million?
Find it for you. Keep going. I'll find it for you.
So my immediate thought with this, where my mind goes, is that this animal genetics idea has actually been around for a heck of a long time. We're talking hundreds of years. Farmers have been breeding animals based on characteristics for a long time. I mean, pig farmers, you know, they would look at a field of pigs and they'd pick the fattest ones, the healthiest ones, the ones with the curliest tails, you know, whatever characteristics you might want to breed for. And they look after those ones. They keep those in the breeding stock, but kill the other ones off and send them off to be eaten, basically. Now, this is basically a, in theory, a slightly more advanced version of that. Presumably they're looking at a genetic level at what's actually going on inside the animals, as opposed to just looking at them, at the animals, and going, well, that one looks fat, where that one looks thin.
The best quality, yeah. And to make them less prone to diseases as well. Yeah, leaner, bigger, healthier, you name it.
Yeah.
I don't want waste.
My problem with it is I don't know how big that market is. And I don't know whether there is one of these companies in every country in the world doing this, or whether this is a £500 million market and Genus has got the whole thing.
No, definitely not got the whole thing. There are other companies that that do this, but it is one of the bigger players. Looking at the revenues for last year, Henry, they had a revenue of £689 million.
Okay.
That was up from 22, which was £593 million. And they made a profit of £71.5 million.
So that to me is actually a lot better than I expected. I thought this was a much, much smaller business. The fact they've managed to get up to 600 plus million and there's this share price weakness, I think this could be a takeover target, like you say, because
it's 1.1 billion market cap.
Yeah.
Historically, it's been as high, as a five billion market cap.
Wow.
It's a 60 pound stock, I think, at its height. I'll have to get the chart up on it. So one sec, bear with me, mate. Let's see what I can do here. Let's go, Max. Right. So yeah, £60 per share it was.
Wow. Yeah. And it's down at 17 now.
And now it's at 17. So it's had a few profit warnings, mate. It simply cannot get out of its own way at the moment. And you've also got to think what's going against it is that it's this thing about lab made meat, but also more and more people are going down the route of going vegan or vegetarian or eating less meat.
Yeah.
Certain countries are eating more meat than they've ever done. Are you with me?
Yeah.
It's one of them things.
Well, I like that as a. I really like that as an idea. I'd want to look into the market as a whole a little bit more and see what the dynamics are like. How does it stack up against the competition? What's causing the profit warnings as well? I'd want to go and have a look at that. Are we talking about
the profit warnings have mainly come from China? Less.
Yeah. So are we literally just talking they are buying less pork, or are we saying the costs have got out of control?
Let's put it politely, they're buying less of the products that enables the breeding of the animals.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe the pigs have got more potent, I don't know.
Well, they certainly have on Twitter. Bum, 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 bum. Anyway, next up, mate. What have you got in that space?
I've got to get that image out of my head now. Moving swiftly on from our porcine friends. Venture Life Group is my next pick. Much more family friendly, I think you'll find. Venture Life Group, the ticker is VLG. It's an international consumer medical company, described as a self-care medical company that develops and commercializes healthcare products, including oral care, food supplements, medical devices, and what they describe as dermocosmetics. So, you know, years ago, when you'd go to the pharmacy and you'd go, I've got a headache, and some little old guy'd go into the back, grind up some pills and give you a, you know, jar of powder, and you'd hope it wouldn't kill you.
Whereas, I've never experienced that. Not even in Jamaica. Okay. No. Did they do that in Nottingham?
Yeah. Well, I don't know where I've been shopping. Anyway. you go. Sorry, ladies and gents. Peter's lost it. Anyway, you go into your average pharmacy today or even a supermarket and you've got mouthwashes and you've got vitamins and you've got hair products and you've got skin products. You know, I mean, I slather all these things on and I still look the way I do. But anyway, all of these sort of, they're not quite medical healthcare products. They're sort of self-care products. There's a huge demand for them because we've got more and more access to information about our own health and we want to look after it. And therefore, there's a demand for multivitamins and skincare products and shampoos and conditioners and all the rest of it. Now, Venture Life Group develops, manufactures, and distributes these sorts of products. So they're effectively non-drug products. You don't need to go to a GP and get a prescription for mouthwash unless you've had, I don't know, terrible halitosis or something. And all of these things help people to lead a healthier life in theory. Things like mouthwash, skincare, earwax treatments if you're over the age of, well, who knows when that horrible ailment starts. But if you're after a certain age, earwax treatments, glucose management products. These are things you can walk into Boots or Sainsbury's or even buy off Amazon. And there's a huge demand for them. Now, the company is available on a PE of just 8. It's not particularly expensive. They've got forecast turnover growth of about 7%, I think. So it's a growing business. It's profitable. And it's, again, the sort of thing that I could see a big company like AstraZeneca or Haleon or GSK coming along and snapping up in a heartbeat, because it's got an established, proven track record of finding these products, commercializing them. It's got a proven distribution network of relationships on the high street and online, and it's demonstrated that it can sell its portfolio profitably. And even if one of our companies doesn't buy, even if a listed company doesn't buy, I could see private equity snapping it up.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEATS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the Twin Peaks promo code and you can save up to £69. Visit shareScope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
So that was one that caught my eye. It wasn't a name I'd come across before I started doing research for the pod, but Venture Life Group. The ticker is VLG.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think it's too small for any of the companies that you mentioned, Henry. It's only got a market cap of sub 60 mil. So I don't see it moving the needle for Haleon or GSK or AstraZeneca, but definitely a larger peer, a 200 million market cap or a US bolt-on company would take it out of circulation. Most definitely. I love the fact that it's quietly just been moving. I've not seen it being ramped on Twitter, but the chart here is saying to me from, where are we looking at now? We're looking at November. We were down at 28 pence-ish and we're now at 46. So that's not a bad percentage move over the past, 8 months, 9 months? It's not bad at all. And it's quietly done that. So I'm just trying to look at what the news has been. And clearly they've had some good news for that to have moved the shares somewhat. So yeah, full year numbers look like that was what the trigger was. And then they had the trading update on the 6th. Again, that must have helped them. So yeah, good call, mate. Good. Another little one that's off the radar. That's small enough to compound going forward. You know, best of all, if it gets left alone, Henry, and it's only a sub 60 million market cap, could it become a 600 million market cap company in the next 10 years?
Very easily.
If it's left alone to just do its own thing, grow its lines, you know, build overseas and expand overseas, could it not become a 600 million market cap company? 10 bagger for you, Henry?
There you go, you see.
It possibly could. Right, I'm going to be brief about this one before I put some sizable sort of commentary on one of the stocks which I think people should have a really, really close look at. I want to talk about Hikma Pharma. I owned it before. bought it at sub 17, trimmed it at 20 odd, £23, eventually exited it at £21 odd. Share price for the past 12 months since I've sold it has remained below where I sold it. It remains on my watch list. It's something that I'm really, really interested in, but I'm not going to pay more than 18 quid for it. It's been down there, the 18. And when I was ready to put the buy button back on there again and buy it, I went, nah, I could probably get it for 17. Now it's 18. Fatal mistake. And it moved off again. And it's totally, it closed tonight at 20 quid, I think. Ticker symbol is HIK. What does it do? It manufactures non-branded, generic and in-licensed pharmaceutical products. Business segments include three different ones, injectables, producing injectable medicines, and generics, developing, marketing and generic pharmaceuticals, and branded pharmaceutical products. Global presence as well, with operations in North America, Middle East, and of course, Europe. I want to talk a bit about their injectable businesses, because we're having more and more people having to do this, go this way rather than taking oral pharmacology. And they've got relationships in North America, Europe, Middle East, North Africa as well. And they also offer an extensive portfolio of sterile injectable products. So I think this could help them somewhat going forward. And as I said to you before, I was waiting for the share price to drop to 18 and possibly go lower. Missed the opportunity because on the 8th of August, they came out with some news and the share price after the half-year financial report, the share price went whoop, up and away. And basically what they said was, we had an excellent first half of the year. All of our businesses contributed to our strong performance, delivering 10% group revenue growth, said Chief Executive Mish Law. And the operating profit flew higher by 43%. Is there any wonder people want to buy it and start that? Who shows operating profit up 43% to 351 million? Although the little fly in the ointment was their cash flow was down 11%. So obviously their costings, their capex regarding people must have increased a little bit, because that went down a little bit regarding their cash flow. So I suspect it's capex. So that's all I'm going to say about that one. It's a large enough entity at, where are we now? Where are we with the market cap? What did I say it was? 4.53, a P of 31, yield of 3. So it's quite richly priced-ish, but it's always been richly priced, really. 4.53 billion, FTSE 100 company. Keep an eye on that one. It's slow, it's steady. It's got a global reach, and just come out with really good numbers. You know, 43% operating profit. It's like, yeah, that was made me sit up and buy some more if I had stock, but I don't currently have it. Any thoughts on Hikma Pharma, Henry?
I've actually recommended it. Well, not that I give recommendations. I should be careful saying that on a podcast, to be honest with you. I was once asked for an opinion on it and gave an opinion similar to yourself, that I would buy it were it my money. The individual in question didn't buy it. It must be 3 years ago. I talked about it with a friend and I've never really gone back to it and looked at it, because I don't generally play around in the healthcare space. It's just not an area I know a lot about. But Hikma has been one I've looked at, like I say, 3-4 years ago, and I liked it. I liked it enough to recommend it to someone. So yeah, good name. My only retort, that's not the word I'm going for, but we'll settle for it. If it's had this upgrade and the share price has moved correspondingly, should you not move your buy target to reflect the new news you've got?
That's a very good question, Henry. You know what? Yes, I should, right? However, my caveat being, you know when you bought something all that time ago and you made a significant wedge?
Yeah.
You almost want to buy it at the same point again. It doesn't always happen.
Yeah.
So having bought it at sub 17 and sold it at 21, I'm still sitting here in profit and thinking, made that chunk of change. I can actually buy it at 20 now. And if it carries on accelerating and it has another good year next year, getting 3% dividend, and it's now at 22 quid. That's what traders do. They're buying for 10%, 15%. They don't care where the share price is and where it was before or where it's potentially. They're just going in for 5, 10%.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
wanting to buy it for the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And get 45% out of it. And only having to trade it to buy and to sell. Not to do that 6 times. You with me? So that's why I'm a bit. I think they call that
anchoring bias.
Yeah. I could have been a Navy boy. Yeah, absolutely.
No, I think
it is anchoring
it's the buying the Mars bar. When I was 10, I could buy a Mars bar for 50p. It's £3 in the shop. I'm never buying it for 3 quid. Well, you're never going to buy a Mars bar again for 50p.
You're spot on. But listen, I anchored myself there at 18 quid. I could have bought it at 18 quid. I chose not to because I was greedy and cheap. And then it went, bye-bye, Peter.
On the flip side of this, you know, you could also respond. The market responds to information about this year's profit accelerating. Great. What the heck happens next year when it slows down? Does the share price fall again?
It does. It does.
And there you go, you see. So if you pay the inflated price today thinking it'll be carried on into next year, maybe you come back to me in 24 months' time going, why on earth did I buy that at £21, you absolute nugget? I could have had it for 16 quid.
Henry, this is why we have watch list. Because on that watch list, there's going to be a better opportunity than currently than Hikma having gone past my buy price and gone bye-bye. There's that company today that wasn't even on my watch list that I knew about, went bang, bang, bang. 1 hour, bosh. Smashed it on its head. Happy with the position size that I've got on there as a starting point. Happy with that. And I'll move on.
I'll move on.
Right. Okay. Where are we at? Where shall I go? I've got two stocks to cover very quickly here. I think I'm going to go, Henry, with another one in that field. I'll leave the American one to last. I'm going to go with a company which I so wish I had bought near its nadir. In the last 52 weeks. And it is called, ladies and gents, animal care. See a theme running here, anybody? Animal care, ticker symbol ANCR. Market cap, and this is one I think is going to be a 10 bagger if it does the business, Henry. Yeah. Market cap, £165 million. Yeah. So at 1.65 billion in 10, 15 years' time, if it doesn't get taken over, that's a 10 bagger, my friend. Yeah. So the range at the moment with this stock, 52 week, is £1.60 to £2.88. Today it closed at £2.73, near its 52 week highs. The shares are up. Hiding in plain sight, 56% in the past 12 months.
Lovely.
56%, Henry. Caveat that, past 3 years, down 24%. So if it's recharging its batteries, and its revenue and profitability, at least another 24% in there to catch up.
It's another one of your recovery plays, but this one's actually recovering.
It's recovering already. It's up 56% in the past 12 months, and it's got boots on the ground. This is what I'm talking about. So reason why I'm talking about this, I had a conversation with a friend who listens to the podcast regularly, and he mentioned a very expensive visit to the vets. Not laughing at the expense of the vets. I'm laughing at the fact that this is what triggered me thinking about this particular stock. And this company, if anyone's got a cat, a dog, a horse, a pony, it's probably when they give it the animal, any pharmacology, any tablets, any course of treatment, it might be, they might be linked to it, to be fair. They may be making some money off it. So they produce international veterinary, pharmaceutical and services business. That's what it does. That's what it is. Exports to over 40 markets in Europe and beyond. Got a direct commercial presence in 7 European countries listed on AIM. And their focus is sustainable growth through innovative animal health products. Everyone knows that I butcher names, so just bear with me here, right? I'm going to try and get my tongue around some of these names. Cleaver, used for dogs, contains the active ingredient rupinirole. Somebody will correct that for me. Daxocox, designed for dogs with active ingredient. Not even going to try that one. Thiamacore, oral solution intended for cats. Danilon, Equidus Gold for horses and ponies. I'm sure somebody's got horses and ponies. Phytophenolin, pronounced that right, suitable for dogs.
Auralade, I thought that was an antihistamine.
Cats with, well, maybe. Isotonic formula and amino acids. And Aurumic, I think, eardrops. You mentioned eardrops a bit earlier for cats and dogs. Yeah, that's just some of their products. Right, so if you've been to the vets in the past 12 months with any animal, right, and it's needed some pharmacology, maybe animal care or another company of like.
Just a health warning to our audience here. Please don't use the eardrops for your cats and your dogs on yourself.
No, not yourself. So that's the reason why I'm bringing that one to the attention, mate. Market cap is only small. It's... share prices accelerated in the past 12 months. Recent numbers have been really, really good. I think, mate, I don't often say it, but I think this one has got legs.
Oh. And this is what happens, ladies and gentlemen, when Peter Higgins samples the goods at the company that he's talking about. You get terrible dad jokes.
I don't own it yet. I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, it's up 56% in the past 12 months and I've missed it. And I'm like, mate, at some point really I might just have to go, unlike the other one, Ikma, which is already
a company.
I might just have to just buy, you know, grip my teeth and just buy it.
Years ago, you and Wheelie talked about, I think it was Pets at Home, the vet care group.
Yeah.
Years ago, Wheelie's got pets.
Yeah, he might do.
And then you made a good point back then. People treat pets almost like another member of the family. So they'll do anything. Well, there you go. You see,
if we go back
to the days when your pharmacist just gave you some white powder in a jar and said, "Try not to die when taking that." You know, your dog slept outside, tied to a stake at the end of the garden. They weren't allowed on the sofa. You know, and when they died, they probably got chopped up and turned into stew. But
Henry, stop. Not everyone was raised in Nottingham, mate. Stop. Come on.
That was just last week, anyway.
Animals are part of the family. Cats, dogs, even ponies, mate, they're part of the family.
I know.
If it's a cat or a dog, people have got them on the sofa. Some people have got them lying on the beds with them. I'm like, oh, no, not on my bed, mate. Thank you very much. But each to their own.
I can already hear my sister-in-law, you know, sending the assassins out. She's got two cats and she loves them to bits. We get some amazing photos. So
let's just hope she's not where you're visiting this weekend. Otherwise, yeah, exactly. Probably get stuck around the chops. So, yes, ladies and gents, that's my highest recommended stock for you guys today. Animal Care, ANCR. I don't own it. Not trading it, not leveraged in it, haven't got a penny in it. And that's my stock to recommend to you guys. Have a little look, check them out. You know, if it gets big enough, Henry, one day it might even decide to move across from AIM to the FTSE 100.
So we'll see.
Still only small. Right. Be quick with this one, then I'll be quick with my last one. Go for it.
Well, I was going to say, actually, before we go for another share, we've missed something very important. We missed it last week. we missed the competition winner for July, and I can hear the audience screaming at us yes. over the airwaves.
Go for it. Go for it. We don't want them screaming at us, mate. We don't want them screaming at us.
There you go, you see. So our winners for July were one winner and two runners-up. In reverse order, we've got some great names here, ladies and gents. In reverse order, in third place, with a return of 15% for the month of July, we have a returning contender, Postman Pat 1965 again, with Longboat Energy, Argo Blockchain, Eurasia Mining, RC365 Holdings, and Affentra. In second place, with a return of 17% for the month of July, we have at Paul Ben 001586 97, with a portfolio that included Cleantech Lithium, HVivo, JP Morgan UK Small Cap Growth and Income, XP Factory, and YouGov. And actually, I can see in my notes here, at Paul Ben goes by the handle of Investor Clouseau, which I thought was rather fantastic.
Fantastic name, fantastic username.
And in first place, with a fantastic return of 24% for the month of July, we have our good friend Patchy again, PatCat68.
Have you reckoned those numbers up properly, mate?
I have. I double, triple, and quadruple checked them, would you believe? With a portfolio.
Patchy, well done again, mate. Well done.
Emerson, Jangada Mines, HVivo, Deltic Energy, and Totally PLC. 24% in 1 month. I mean, all three of those returns, if I got those over just 1 year, I'd be over the moon for the year, let alone in a single month. So very well done to all three of you.
Very, very well done. Bravo. Bravo to all three of you, you gents. Very well done with those. Henry, what was the stock that carried it for Patchy? Did you have the numbers there for any individual ones?
I did. There were two right at the end, actually. Deltic Energy and Totally PLC, 50%.
Wow. Carried by two at near the end.
Yeah. Absolutely astonishing returns. I mean, these are small cap risky companies. Don't get me wrong. If you've done your research and you know them, these are the returns that are available in the market. But they can go the other way. I'd be terrified with some of these businesses.
They often do, which is why we set it up this way, is that the monthly you could do really well. It's a case of who gets the big prize at the end. You know what I mean? Who's got that relatively stable-ish sort of portfolio of five stocks who's going to win the overall prize for close of December, for January. So yeah, cool beans. Do you want to say anything at this moment in time regarding the charity while you're there, and then going to start or
yes.
not?
Actually, whilst we're on off the topic of shares for a moment, I would like to say a huge thank you to people that have taken the time to donate to the fundraise. We had a little bit of a lull for a few weeks, we've had a great flurry of donations. I'm just pulling up the figures. We've just tipped over the £3,000 mark. We're at 3,014, 60% of our target.
Brilliant.
We've had some great donations. I mean, 4 days ago, we had Dave Sumners, £100, a relative newcomer to the podcast, but loving it and the investing ideas it's giving me. Happy to donate to such a great cause. P.S. I love Pete Higgins' Carl Pilkington impressions.
What does that mean? Come on, you have to send me a DM to tell me what that means. I love Carl Pilkington, but for all the wrong reasons. So you'd have to tell me what that means. So yeah, but thank you very much for that generous donation, Dave. That's very, very kind of you, mate.
We've had a kind donation from Nicholas, £2.
Nicholas, yeah.
Please keep up the good work, gentlemen. I won the May prize. Time to buy a lottery ticket. And also, if I can blow my own trumpet for a second, Henry is growing in confidence and stature as a podcast presenter and investor.
Fantastic. So, I've got to say this very quickly, because Terry Nicholas is such a fantastic guy. Took a while to find him because he's gone off Twitter for a variety of different reasons. We spoke about the the genius individuals, generous individuals that are on Twitter, made it uncomfortable for a lot of people that have left. And you've got two prizes, obviously. It's got the Harriman House book. He's chosen that. But what he's done, he's kindly donated the 1 month's subscription for ShareScope SharePad back to you, Henry, to give to Centrepoint's team, yeah, if they so wish to have it, yeah? Or if we can negotiate something with ShearPad, maybe they can give us the equivalent of what that is, whether it's 20 or 30 pounds,
yeah,
as monies that adds to the donation pot. With you, me,
we'll figure that out. I tell you what, though, that is a lovely gesture. That is really, yeah, honestly lovely. Is. So thank you very, very much for that.
Again, he's a good guy, mate. He's a good guy.
It's the generosity of the audience shining through here. We're blessed to have, and I don't use that word very often, but we genuinely are blessed to have such lovely people in the audience. So thank you very, very much.
Absolutely agreed.
And I can't remember if I read this one. I think I did, actually. Michael from Ayrshire, £20 plus £5 gift aid. I think I might have read him out on the last podcast. But again, thank you very much. If any members of the audience haven't donated yet and would like to, all donations are very welcome. £2, £200, 20 pence. You know, it's not about the size of the donation. It's about giving a little something back to the community. This money goes to support children in need. It goes to support young people that haven't got homes. And it goes to help our community, the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast community, to give back to the wider environment in which we live. Because investing is not just about sitting behind a screen and taking money out the market. You know, it's your life is more than that. The legacy you leave behind as an individual, as a parent, as a husband, as a wife, you know, as a mother or a daughter, all of that is tied up. Part of it is investing. Part of that legacy, part of the thing you'll be remembered for, is your passion for investing. But part of it's also the impact you make on the world around you. By doing things like giving to Centrepoint, you're helping to make the world a slightly better place for people that really need it. If you'd like to donate to Centrepoint through our fundraise this year, the page is www.justgiving.com/page/TwinPete's Challenge 24. That's Twin Pete's Challenge 24. All donations are very, very gratefully received.
Brilliant. Thank you, Henry. I'm going to nip in now and do my next stop because you've been talking for a little while. I'll let you do the last one if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah? I'm going to talk about this stock very, very quickly, ladies and gents. And the reason why I'm talking about it very, very quickly is because it's a US stock and it's not one I suspect that anyone's ever heard of. And the reason I'm talking about this particular one is because I'm not sure if you, ladies and gents, have noticed, but a lot of the takeovers that are happening in the US are mainly via private equity. And if they're not from private equity, it's from the behemoth stocks within the pharmaceutical biotech space. And what they've decided to do, a lot of these companies, is not to go for the mega deals, not the Pfizer trying to buy AstraZeneca-type deals. They're looking to do, not necessarily bolt-ons, but reasonably sized purchases that are currently, in their sphere, sub $10 billion, right? So just change the dollar to a pound. They're looking to do sub 10 million market cap purchases. And this company here is really accelerating its growth and its revenues and so on and so forth. And it's already got annual revenues of 1.83 million. And this market cap company is 7.8 billion, and I'm like, right, okay. So in 7 years, cash flow revenue equals the current market cap. If it doesn't go anywhere, obviously it should go somewhere, even if it stays the same, but it won't be still a 7 million market cap company, $7 million market cap company. However, anyway, I digress. The company is called I've got to pause every time trying to pronounce these names. Oh,
come on, deep breath.
Excel Lixix. Yeah, Excel Lixix. And ring. Ticker symbol Excel.
Sounds like what you yell when you fall down the stairs.
Alexix. Okay. Current share price is at $26.50. Price range of 18.64 to 27.5. A PE of 22, which is quite low for a pharma company, lower than Hikma in the UK at the minute. And I just think it's a nice morsel for private equity or larger companies. Based in Alameda in California, focus, a bit like Hikma, but mainly it's in focused on genomics-based drug discovery. And the reason why this jumped out at the charts for me or onto my screen was because on August the 6th, only 2 weeks ago, I'll read this to you. Today, we announced that it's supplemental new drugs application, also known as SNDAs, for Cabometyx, has been accepted by the US FDA for treatment for adults with previously treated locally advanced unresectable or metastatic, well or moderately differentiated pancreatic tumors. Yeah, so it's cancer. It's involved in the cancer space, and it's got a fantastic pipeline. It's just an interesting company, and only 7.5 billion market cap. And it's one I've got on my list now as what I think potentially could do well, and I may want to buy it. You know, and if it doesn't get taken out, it'll carry on growing and become a 10 billion market cap, maybe even a 20 billion. Market cap company. Something interesting, I know this will appeal to you, Henry. The name, which I've butchered, Exelexis, I pronounce it twice differently, I think, by the way, is derived from the Greek word for evolution, reflecting the company's growth from a functional genomic startup to a fully integrated biopharmaceutical company that adapts, survives, and thrives. There you go. Greek are fantastic with words, aren't they?
I was going to, yeah. Except because you've got elixir, which is life.
Yep.
And then there's, I don't know, you know, I mean, I don't know Greek, don't get me wrong. I didn't study ancient Greek or anything, but I feel like Alexelixi. Maybe it is evolution.
That's what they're saying. Yeah. They rise from the word evolution.
Yeah, I think it actually is the Greek for evolution. So, yeah, I mean, anyway, that's besides the point. We're not on an ancient languages podcast here, ladies and gents.
Right, okay. But that's the one I've got, mate.
I like it.
And animal care, Yeah.
Yeah, I like
they're
it.
Too quality. I tend to pick some duds, don't I? Some crappy stocks, and people go, what a load of nonsense. Those two.
I mean, I still think it also sounds a little bit like what you yell when you fall down the stairs. But that aside, my take on all of these businesses we've discussed on this pod, and the thing I always come back to, I had a fantastic conversation with a guy called Michael T, last week, about a small healthcare type business. And he was saying, you know, doesn't like healthcare businesses. Too many tests that can go wrong. Who knows what's going to happen with them? They fail a test or someone dies when they take a medication. The next thing, the thing's bankrupt. Better to buy the picks and shovels in the industry and let someone else go and hit the landmines with them, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, that wasn't his exact phrasing. I'm paraphrasing there. But
yeah,
he then went on to talk about a company that he gave me a really good story about. I'm not going to talk about that business because we haven't really got time to cover it on the show, but the thing that really interested me about the way he talked about it, he described it in a way that I understood what they did and I understood what they were going to do next. I sort of understood the business strategy behind what they were doing. how they were. They were producing a special type of machine that did a thing. He explained what the machine did for me. He explained where it's used, why people like using it, why it's better than the alternatives. And I came away from this conversation with a really great feeling about, you know, this is a business I want to go and have a look at more. It's interested me. The thing I find with all of these businesses we've discussed today, I've got so much research I want to go and do to figure out, you know, where does Genus fit in the market for animal genetics? How big is it relative to the competitors? Is it a winner? Is it a loser? Is it growing? Is it shrinking? Could it sell more? Is that like, I don't know. I've got to go and find out. It's the same with animal care. I've got this narrative in my head that people love their pets, but much beyond that, what differentiates animal care from Pets at Home or Pets R Us or Pets for You or Pets.com or, you know, whoever else is out there? Spire Healthcare for Animals. I don't even know. I don't have a pet myself. But where do they fit in? And to me, that's the element that's missing in the healthcare space in my knowledge. It's the same with this cancer business. Where does this fit in the pantheon of drugs and treatments and options that are available to different healthcare systems? And to me, that would be the starting point. When I come off this call, I've jotted some notes down and I'm going to go away and have a look at them and figure out where they fit in the wider market. Because they all seem like robust, solid companies, but investing is about not just picking robust, solid companies, but picking robust, solid companies that are going to do well in their market against their competitors.
Absolutely. And almost as important to all of that, Henry, they've got a good management team.
That helps.
That are going to suffer it, because they can have a great product, great brands, great growth and revenue streams. If they've got a poor CEO and a poor CFO, they can undo so many things.
Absolutely.
Where do businesses go wrong? Poor management. Yeah. So that's my one. Excel, ticker symbol in the US. Do you want to quickly do the last one or do you want to leave it? What's up to you? We've been running for an hour and a half.
Well, the only other thing I would say, and I've made this point a few times, so I'm not going to labour it. If you don't feel confident in the market and you don't know about the dynamics and you want to buy exposure to the whole thing, there are funds available that give you exposure to a sector. So I was looking at two before we came on the call. The Invesco S&P Small Cap Healthcare ETF, which owns the S&P Small Cap 600 Healthcare Index. That's basically an index that comprises healthcare-related products, facility providers, service providers, biotech firms, etc. Couple of things. In their top 10, they've got the Ensign Group, which is a US healthcare business. They've got Glaukos Core, which is an ophthalmic medical technology business. They've got Organon & Co., which is a global pharmaceutical company developing and delivering healthcare solutions for women's health. And a very, very interesting index there. I think the fees were a little on the high side because it's so specialist. You know, I think they were over 1%, which, to be honest with you, when I'm looking at funds, 1% is my upper limit. I don't like anything over that. Yeah. The other name that sprang out at me was Polar Capital's Healthcare Opportunities Fund. It's up 482% since 2008. That's about 30% annualized, which is just astonishing. They benchmark against the MSCI World Daily Total Return Healthcare Index, which is up about 300% over the same period. So that's about 20% annualized. So they've outperformed the benchmark by 10% a year, which is
really good.
Amazing. Again, some businesses I've never heard of in here. The Zealand Pharma, which is a Danish biotech company, shares are up 134% this year alone. They've got Swedish Orphan Biovitrum, which focuses on rare diseases in hematology and immunology. Shares are up 50% over the last 2 years. They've got Novo Nordisk as well, which you've probably heard of. I think the ticker is NOVOBC. And they're a specialist in diabetes treatment. So if you're not comfortable picking out individual names in the sector, there are funds available that give you diversified access. So don't feel that you have to stock pick in a specialist area if you want to get exposure. You can give your money to a fund or an index. Let that do the heavy lifting for you until you're more confident about how the market functions in that sector.
Yeah, no, that's a really good shout, mate. That's quite a staggering compounding CAGR on that fund, mate, of if 25 to 30% for the past 17 years. That's absolutely smashed it. He's one of the fund managers called Gareth Powell, and he's one of the few fund managers at Polar Capital I've not met. And I'm now gonna have to go and meet him. Forget about buying the fund. I'm gonna have to meet him at some point and find out how he's doing, what he's doing, because he's absolutely smashed it out of the park there with those stocks. So yeah, I'll have to go and have a chat with him at some point. But that number there, since he's been in charge of that fund since 2007. 17 years. And he's not one of those fund managers that gets talked about.
But I've never heard of him.
He's probably outperforming most of the fund managers that do get talked about.
He's about three times my annualized return.
Wow.
And over a longer time period.
When I finish tonight, I'm going to go back and have a look at what Nick Train and Terry Smith have done since 2007. Let's see what they've compounded in comparison to Gareth Powell. That could be some interesting numbers there. Because them, the two that the go to, let's talk about them two. They are literally, you know, the number one and number two fund managers allegedly in the country at the moment, but they haven't really performed for the last 2-3 years, you know. And this guy's smashing out of the park. We'll have to have a chat with him, I think, Henry. Good shout, good call. Love the ETF. And one of them, I wish I'd bought that fund many years ago, but I haven't got it. brilliant shout, mate. And kudos to you again. Thank you for your support again. Before I go, I've got to say a big, big thank you to Sam Bell and Donald Leggett for the GovaCon UK 2024 event, which Henry and I were invited to last week. All things to do with tech, all things to do with the Go language and developers. I know how to switch a computer on, switch it off. These guys are writing code in front of you and putting things together and doing all kinds of stuff. And they had the best of the best from around the world at this conference. So if you know anybody that's interested in tech, wants to be a software engineer, wants to work for Google, Microsoft, Adobe, anybody involved in gaming, you need to be setting yourself up to attend this event in 2025. Held at a fantastic place called The Brewery near Liverpool Street Station as well. And fortunately, it was a lovely hot day. Henry and I got a bit thirsty, so we enjoyed ourselves and had a few drinks. But the event was superb. So kudos to the team there at Copia Digital and the GopherCon team. Sam, thanks again, and hopefully see you soon. Ladies and gents, that's the end of this podcast. We've been running around now for an hour and a bit. I was hoping to keep this short and sweet for Henry because he's had a long and difficult week. With all things strenuous, including putting a bookcase together, I believe. But we haven't, as per usual. We've rabbited on and rambled on. But if you have enjoyed this podcast, which I hope you have, just give it a like on YouTube. Just reshare it and retweet it on Twitter, X, and other social media platforms that you're on, and share it with other people. And if Henry has said something that you liked, tell him on Twitter, social media, DM him, whatever. And if I've said something that you dislike, tell me, yeah? And let me know, and I'll try and improve for the next podcast. Ladies and gents, have a fantastic weekend and a bank holiday weekend. Henry, thank you ever so much again, sir.
My pleasure, Peter.
Any parting words of wisdom from the sage?
Just enjoy yourselves, look after yourselves, and please don't be strangers. It's honestly, it's been a very, very nice 2 weeks getting all the comments. And I've heard from people that I've not heard from for a long time. So please don't be shy. I love hearing from you all. So does Peter. So keep it up, guys. Keep it up. Thank you very much.
Brilliant. We can call this the Bank Holiday Bonanza because it's lasted so long. Ladies and gents, take care. God bless you all. Stay safe. Be kind. Look out for one another. and be compassionate and be kind on Twitter and social media and make it wholesome again, please, so everyone can enjoy the platform and other platforms as well. Take care. God bless. Stay safe. Be kind.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.